Welcome to Active Kitchen, a fortnightly podcast of food and cooking stories. My name's Alex and still away, once again in the outback, pretty sure I'm still having fun. Maybe that's just me projecting into the future. This podcast features a familiar voice because while I was talking to Nozzy in Zimbabwe some time ago, I took the chance to record two interviews because she's that interesting and awesome. In this interview, I talked to her about her personal experiences with learning to cook, as well as how her experience in Australia changed food for her. Once again, I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to Nozzy because she's awesome. Hi, Nozzy. Thank you for joining me again on the podcast.
Thanks, Alex. It's good to be back.
Last time we were talking about food in Zimbabwe in general. This time I wanted to ask you about your experiences with food and with cooking. So I wanted to start by asking whether you did very much cooking when you were a kid or not.
As a kid, not very much. We did cookery classes, probably in high school, but because you were always with a partner, you know, you don't get to do the whole thing yourself. So I think my cooking experience was very limited. You know, I could chop things up but you know, things like cooking things by myself and putting them in an oven and, you know, all of that sort of thing. Then, you know, the other person would usually do that
right
for me, because I went to a school that was mostly sighted people, so I was the only blind person there.
Did you cook very much with, like, at home with your mum or dad or not?
No, we didn't do any of that. My parents were very protective as far as letting me near a stove was concerned.
Right. But nonetheless, at school you got to chop things up and those sorts of things? Yeah,
I got to learn how to peel and chop and do all of those things.
Did your teachers give you special instructions about that, or did you just make it up as you went along? Because I can imagine you making it up as you went along, but
possibly. But they were very hands-on. But I think I'm not really, I don't like being boxed. So,
yep.
So I like to be able to, like, make things up as I go along as well.
Now, hearing that you didn't really learn to cook at home or didn't do very much at school is a bit of a surprise to me, because when I knew you, which is when we're at university, and I particularly knew you when you were living with a couple of housemates in Carlton, I think it was, here in Melbourne, I seem to remember you doing quite a bit of cooking. So,
wow, that's a story in itself.
Did you learn to cook in Australia then?
I did. I learned to cook in Australia. I had a very good occupational therapist. So when I decided to take the plunge to move into a house, I told my housemates, listen, I have no idea how to cook. So you're going to have to help me. If you guys are willing to help and if you're willing to work with me, then we can do this. So my very brave housemates agreed. And moved in to the house, and my housemates were amazing. Like, they were just so helpful. I had one particular housemate, Chris, who was just amazing. He was good at showing me, very patient with me, very, you know, he would, when he was cooking, he would have me come along and, you know, say, I'm cooking a stir fry today. And so he'd show me the veggies that you'd put in the stir fry and help me chop up things and, you know, and just would let me experiment and let me do the cooking, which was great. Like, he was just very patient. But I also had an occupational therapist who came in, because, I mean, that's one of the advantages of Australia, is that if you have some sort of a disability, you've got people who are there to help you. So this lady would come in, and so she'd come and show me, like, we'd make a chart about, you know, how long do you cook a piece of meat for, or how long do you cook sausages for, or whatever, and we would try it out. You know, I remember my first ever sort of cooking experience by myself was cooking sausages. So we put them on the grill, and we she told me the times that I would need and told me what to feel for, so the firmness with a spatula, so just feel the firmness of the sausage and, you know, it starts to feel a little bit more crispy. And so, yeah, that was my first cooking experience, and it was amazing to be able to serve that to my housemates when they came home.
So the sausages were a success then?
They were a success.
Fantastic. Already knew how to chop and peel and all that sort of stuff. Then you come to Australia and now you're using the grill and all those sorts of things and learning times for meat and that sort of stuff. Did you start, like, were you game enough to use the oven and all those sorts of things as well?
Oh, yeah, I loved, when I learned how to bake, I loved baking.
Right.
It was one of my favourite things. Yeah, yep. I would always, the house would just be, would always have a jar full of biscuits or a cake that I'd bake.
Yeah.
My housemates now, from then, will tell me that, you know, they just remember me covered in flour whenever I used to come and answer the door.
That's awesome. So when I think about doing things like creaming butter and sugar, there's a lot of that's really visual. So did you figure out the textures that things needed to be at, or was it again about timing?
It was about textures. Yep. It was definitely about textures, because things feel very different. Even if you're feeling with a spoon, they feel very different. So there's a lot of smell, a lot of touch. You have to be prepared to get your hands dirty if you're going to be a blind person cooking.
Sure.
So there's a lot of touch. There's a lot of smell, lots of sort of feeling things with a spoon or...
It's fair to say that as a sighted person, I usually end up covered in head to toe with flour and so on as well. So that's
comforting.
So, Nozia, I kind of guess I want to take a step back and ask, why did you want to learn to cook?
Well, because I was going to be living with, you know, other people, I wanted to be able to contribute to the, you know, the household.
Yep.
But I think it's, I'm also just a nurturer, I think. So I enjoy being able to look after people. So, and I think it's, you know, when I think back, it's probably how my mother looked after us, was, you know, just to feed us. She'd just comfort us with food. So I think that's what it is. I like to be able to nurture and look after people and feed them.
Do you still get to do that now that you're home in Zimbabwe? Are you using your food to care and nurture?
I am. I'm getting back into it. For a long time, so when I got back from Australia, I, you know, didn't have my own place, so that was a bit difficult.
Yep.
And then when I finally got my own house, we started to get lots of power cuts. So cooking just became a bit of a nightmare, really. Just to, you know, because a lot, you know, then everything was it was all electrical. So, you know, we'd have like 24-hour power cuts. And so, you know, he'd kind of cook whenever the power came back. Sometimes I'd wake up at midnight and go, oh, my goodness, the power's back. I better go and cook something.
Oh, my goodness.
But, So I think I lost my passion for cooking because it just became a bit of a chore. But now I'm starting to get it back because I now have a gas stove.
Yep.
And it's so much easier, and there's less power cuts, which means that, you know, if I have to freeze things, I can freeze things, or, you know, keep things in the fridge or whatever that, you know. I can keep things for longer in the fridge because it just takes me a long, you know, when I shop, I have to do a big shop because I don't, you know, might go shopping the next week or whatever.
To go back to when you were learning to cook, what sorts of experiments did you try when you were first learning?
So stir fries, we did a lot of stir fries.
Yeah.
nice and easy. We did, what else did I learn how to cook? You know, things like your spaghetti bolognese, all your easy kind of meals, I suppose, because we were students. We just got the cheaper whatever things that they were, you know, do sausages and mash or so things like that. Curries, we did a few curries. One of my housemates was very good at cooking curries, so learned a lot from her as well.
You mentioned the last time we were talking that in Zim it's not really much of a flavour and spice sort of culture. You really discovered spices from me.
I did. It was amazing to finally discover spices. Should see my spice rack now. I have a whole bunch of them. But yeah, it was amazing.
Do you label them all with Braille tags? Is that
yes? I have little labeling parties. I'm like, everyone, I've got new spices. Come and label all my spices.
That's awesome.
But I also have a very nifty app that you know, I don't have to rely on people anymore as much. So there's a nifty app that you can take a picture of whatever thing you've got and it tells you you've got it, this is a coriander bottle or something, and so I can label it myself without too much trouble.
That is so unbelievably useful. I'm really impressed.
It's very cool.
So what sorts of spices would you use these days? What are your favorites?
What would be my favorite spices? If I'm baking, things like cinnamon and nutmeg and all of that sort of thing. I love that warm scent that they give. It just, I don't know, there's something comforting about those spices. And then, you know, as far as herbs, probably coriander. If I'm doing curries, I'll do lots of coriander. And what else would I use? Turmeric. Can't really, it just depends what I'm making, hey? Sure. Italian herbs, mixed herbs, that sort of thing.
These days when you're cooking, are you mostly cooking from memory or are you using recipes? Where are you getting your inspiration?
So for my 21st, one of my housemates, Chriso, made me this beautiful Braille recipe book. She just collected a whole bunch of recipes from, I don't know, from different, from a lot of her recipes that she used and made it into a book for me. So I use a lot of her recipes still.
Wow, that's wonderful.
People have sent me recipes over the years. And I'll try and memorize as much as I can because I don't want to be, you know, touching pages with my dirty fingers. and there's lots of recipe things on, you know, recipe apps on the iPhone. So I'll often listen to a recipe or whatever and on the, or read a recipe and then just try and memorize it and wash my hands every so often if I've forgotten an ingredient and ask my phone to tell me what it was.
I was going to ask, you know, what sorts of, I guess, barriers are there to cooking as a blind person? And obviously not just being able to glance over at a recipe is one that I mean, being able to do that is something that I so completely take for granted that I frequently don't, I don't have to wash my hands in order to check a recipe. And I'd never really thought about what a privilege that is, but obviously it is. What are the sorts of barriers do you think there are to, I guess, blind people being being relaxed about cooking?
I don't know if there are that many barriers because there's so many gadgets to make life easier. So for a lot of blind cooks, so people who take cooking seriously, there's so many devices that are available.
Right.
Expensive, but they're there.
Yeah.
You know, there's your talking kitchen scales and your talking microwaves and your, you know, cutters that cut to a specific thing that you're looking for to cut.
Talking microwaves is a really scary idea.
Yeah, you should go have a look at one. Yeah, they're pretty amazing. Yeah, there's not too many barriers. If you're really going to take cooking seriously, there are aids and devices that will help you because there are lots of you know, there's a blind chef that was on MasterChef a few years ago, I think.
Right.
So
the barrier is more about money rather than access?
Yeah, pretty much. So the barrier is money. Yeah, if you've got the money, you can get all of it. But, you know, you can make do with your knife, your standard knife and your standard whatever cooking materials that you have.
Do you have any of those fancy appliances that talk to you?
No, I don't have any of those fancy appliances. I've got a little liquid measure indicator thing. That's that's my fancy appliance. So you put it in if you're measuring a liquid, you put it in a cup.
Yep.
And it just as it's about to fill up or whatever, it beeps at you. So
right. It's really thanks. Cool. Beeping at me. So you're starting to get back your interest in cooking. Do you have any plans or anything that you would like to try making that you haven't made yet?
Interesting question. I haven't done fish, so I'd like to try that.
Is that easy to get in Harare?
Relatively easy to get. So you can get river fish.
Yep.
And what else? I'd love to try how to make a pancake. You know, I've been trying to make pancakes for I don't know how long.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm too worried to wait, you know, too scared to waste ingredients. Yep. So I might just give it a try and just try and make some pancakes.
Are you worried about the flipping or?
Yes.
Yep.
I think I worry about the flipping and then knowing when it's actually done.
Yes. Do you have a grill?
Yes, I do.
Because I wonder if you could cook them in a shallow pan until they were done on one side and then put them under the grill in that pan.
That could work.
Cook the other side. And I actually think, based on what you were saying before about knowing the texture, the top of a pancake doesn't get very hot.
No, it doesn't. You're right.
You'd be able to feel the change. Like you'd be able, you know when to flip a pancake because there's bubbles on the top in the batter. And I think you'd be able to feel that.
Yeah, so I'll let you know when I've done my pancakes.
That's very exciting. What a wonderful thing to experiment on.
I'll try.
Thank you so much for talking to me again, Nozzy.
Thank you, Alex. That was great.
Thanks for listening. You can send feedback to actsofkitchen@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review on iTunes to help other people find me, and check out my Patreon page too. Happy cooking.